save your life, you'll lose it. And if you would lose your life for my sake, you'll save it. What profit is there in gaining the whole world if you lose or forfeit yourselves in the process? A word from our holy scriptures. Despite all that's going on today, and I think people through history have thought the same thing, the world really is a weird, wild, and very wonderful place. It always has been. Yet this era that we're in right now is unique in that we can watch things play out in real time all around the earth. Anybody watching the Olympics? You can watch as those rocks are thrown down the, sheet? You know, watch them play hockey, watch several things at the same time, actually. I can not only read about, but actually see what's going on at my house. I have a little camera. I can see what's going on around my house. I can talk with anyone in the world in real time, face-to-face or virtually face-to-face, talk to them, watch them. I can check my investments, find out the weather anywhere, look up who's who in the world, find the best deals at my grocery store, follow what world leaders are doing anywhere around the world today, start my car, play a game, watch a movie, and order groceries simply by picking up my phone. Does that boggle your mind? Boggles my mind. I can do all of that in the comfort of my home, in my easy chair, in just a few minutes. Convenient, easily, do all of those things. This is the stuff we never even thought about or imagined could happen a short 25 years ago. And no one would have even believed you 50 years ago that this is the kind of world we'd be living in 2026. Ever, in just a couple of generations. It has been that transformative and that transforming, and it has changed our lives and changed the entire world. I'm going to say something. It's nothing compared to what's coming. Nothing. The time is coming very soon when AI will change the world far faster and more dramatically than anything has changed it in the last 20 years. What that actually looks like remains to be seen, although we're seeing hints of it, but guaranteed it's going to affect everything in the world, how we work, what we do, how decisions are made. Big tech is buying it up all over the world. People are losing their jobs because of AI right now. And as the world changes quickly and dramatically, we humans need to be able to respond to whatever happens in ways that will create and promote a life-giving world for everyone. Because if we don't figure that out, how we can do that, things are not going to get better for people. We need to do this as best we can, even though we have never been able to do that in human history. Create loving, good living conditions for everyone. As things change around us, we need to find a way to be solidly planted in morals and ethics that lead to good discernment, wisdom, love, and access to resources that's fair, as best we can. And to get there, we have to have some way to transform hearts and minds as powerfully as technology has changed the world. Do we even have a mechanism like that? Something that can change hearts and minds, like technology has changed the world? It's a pretty tall order, I would say. And I also will say yes, we have had this transformative knowledge for centuries. If we engaged our faith tradition in a meaningful way, it actually has the power to radically change people. I know this because I've experienced it and I have seen other people changed. Last week, I started a sermon series based on the United Church of Canada's three priorities for the church moving forward into the next phase of the church's life. In fact, it's actually using these goals, but it's also engaging a process with the whole church called Toward 2035. Now, we used to plan and think life was going to stay the same forever, basically. Now the church is looking at less than 10 years to plan for the future. That's how fast things are moving. We know that things will be different in 2035, and we have to prepare for that. The three objectives or goals that the United Church has set moving into the future are deep spirituality, bold discipleship, and daring justice. Last week, I started with deep spirituality, and I asked the question, in what is your life, whether that's our families, because we're all grounded in something, whether that's our families, our work, our bank accounts, our activities, we are grounded in something. And if that something is really not life-giving or life-sustaining, our lives will not be as full or rich, and we may not contribute much to the world if we don't root ourselves in something that really gives value to life, to our lives. The objective of deep spirituality in the church is to root ourselves in God and God's life-giving spirit. If we are not rooted these days in love, compassion, goodness, and grace, the outcome we desire for our lives may not be as meaningful or fulfilling as we would like them to be. To embrace the big questions about life and wrestle with them is the purpose of deep spirituality. The second goal that I'm going to touch on today of the United Church is to promote bold discipleship, to realign the church and members of the church with a commitment, a strong commitment, to follow Jesus into the future. Early on in my career in the church, I had the opportunity to be discipled, to enter into a discipleship program. So I was introduced to a woman named Larissa, who was the wife of the Stampeders chaplain at the time, and she had agreed to mentor me or disciple me over many months, and to encourage me in following Jesus. I loved that. I loved that time. It was amazing for me, and it was transformative. At the time that I was discipled, it was through an organization called Man to Man Christian Fellowship. And I knew a bunch of men being discipled in this program, and I said, I want to do that too. So Greg Weigel, who is doing this discipling for men, found Larissa for me, and I started the process. And I loved that process so much that I said, okay, now I'm done the process, I want to go and work for you. What was called man-to-man Christian fellowship. So they changed it, for my sake, to one-to-one Christian fellowship. But since the material itself also was written for men, and which is the material I had used, a friend and I decided to actually write a women's discipleship program, which we called Journey of the Heart, which I still have here. This is my Journey of the Heart mentoring manual for women that I used for many years to go and do one-on-one discipleship or mentoring with women. I then quit my full-time job in the church, went down to part-time, and went part-time with one-to-one discipleship program, which meant there was no money, so I had to raise money as well for my own salary. But I loved it so much that I was willing to do that. And I still, my favorite thing, my favorite means of ministry is working with people one-on-one. I still love it. Discipleship isn't a word we use much anymore in the church. I don't sit around with a lot of my clergy friends talking about discipleship and how they're doing discipleship in their ministries. It's kind of fallen a little bit out of the Christian lexicon, at least in more progressive communities of faith. And perhaps it's because we've become so attached to the idea in our society of an individualism and charting our own paths that we don't really want to consider committing our lives to another person and following their way. Yet discipleship is what Christianity and the Christian church has relied on for centuries to pass on the way of Jesus and to grow committed Jesus followers. It is actually the tool, the means we have for lasting transformation in people's lives. The goal of discipleship is not only to learn and grow into a particular way of doing things, it is to grow us into the likeness of the one who is our teacher or master. And like any apprenticeship program, the goal is to pass on the teaching and wisdom from a seasoned teacher to an acolyte or student, and passing on to them knowledge and ways of being or doing, and also to follow what is modeled or taught by that person. A disciple actually spends so much time with a teacher or master, sometimes they're called or leader, that they begin to speak like, act like, think like, and emulate the one they follow. There was such a bond between the teacher and disciple that one was created in the image of the other. In our case, Jesus. In fact, throughout history, it would be beginning very soon in the season of Lent, throughout history, before anybody could join the church or be baptized in the church as an adult, they would have to be taught, discipled, often for 3 years. Can you imagine? I'm doing a workshop on March 1st for about an hour and a half in order for people to join the church on Easter. This was a fairly rigorous and thorough preparation or discipleship process, often taking years before anybody could be baptized in the church. It doesn't happen anymore. There are, however, lots of examples of discipleship in the world today, just not in the church. Political leaders grooming followers to think and act like them. Corporate leaders who are coaching or mentoring subordinates to run businesses, productive businesses. Cult-like leaders who indoctrinate people to act and think like them. Believe me, my friends, discipleship is alive and well in the world today, just not as much in the church. This is why we maybe need to get back to this idea of bold discipleship. The United Church recognizes that we need to get back to the practices that make us disciples and followers of Jesus, to teach people in the way of Jesus, people who are unafraid to say that they do follow the way of Jesus, that they seek to be like, think like, act like, and believe as Jesus did, who openly proclaim that they love Jesus and want to be like him, and who boldly stand up for what they believe, whose moral compasses don't tolerate just injustice, greed, judgment, or anything that devalues people or God's creation. People willing to tell others that Jesus is at the center of their lives and that they go to church and that love and justice are their guiding principles for all the decisions they make in their lives. Perhaps if we were more focused on discipleship and following the way of Jesus, we would have people less disillusioned with the church, because what we would have is people who are humble and loving, serving Jesus, people in the world living out compassion and justice and joy. That's what you'd see. Maybe we don't see a lot of discipleship practices in the church because it's hard. It's hard. It's an intentional commitment to engage in finding a wise teacher to mentor you and committing to a life of prayer and study and practice and community. It takes time and sacrifice to be a follower of Jesus. In fact, Jesus put it this way. If you want to follow me, he said, you have to take up your cross to follow me. And what is your cross? Anything that will kill the small self in you to crack you open to the big self you can be. At DeWitt, I called it the small S self and the big S self, not Superman. What do I mean by a small S self and a big S self? The small S is the self-centered, selfish individual that wants the things to be comfortable and safe. It's our ego self that protects our individualistic wants and needs and beliefs. Our small S self motivates us to look out for ourselves and lets us believe, in fact, that we have an individual identity that needs to be protective. The small S self is fragile and needy and protective. The small S self makes us curl into ourselves. Our big S self, though, is one that recognizes our connection and responsibility to all God's people and all God's creation. It is the self that releases itself to the greater good and higher purpose. Our bigger selves know that we are made to love and live and rejoice in a life that frees us from ego and perfectionism and protectionism and fear. It blows us open and connects us to everyone. It doesn't act in fear, it acts in love. That's the big self. That's the self we want as Jesus followers. To gain life, Jesus says, is to let go of the small life, is to kill off that small life so we can open up to the true person that we are. Our cross is that which breaks us open to die to self. And there's the rub. We don't really want to do this. It can be painful, and it requires sacrifice to let go of who we think we are to become who we could be. Most people will live in the small self without ever knowing that there is something more, something way more. That there is great freedom in being a disciple of Jesus. Like deep spirituality, we have given our lives to something or to someone that doesn't demand much loyalty or commitment. Yes, we love Jesus, we say, to a degree. Until Jesus makes too many demands on our lives and asks us to sacrifice those things we want so that we can be comfortable and safe. Jesus is not safe, my friends. Yet if we could recover this practice of bold discipleship and took it seriously enough to engage it with some commitment, lives truly would be changed. We could weather all the storms of life. And the church would be changed. I think it would become the most attractive place in the world because it would exude light and love and forgiveness and compassion for all people. All people. What do we have to say about that? Oh God, may it be so. Let's take a moment for reflection.